This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
I'm here with Dr. Ian McDonald, who works here at the Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. Hi, Ian. Welcome to the Jodcast.
Hello.
Could you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be here?
Well, it's a long story, but it started under the clear skies of Australia. I grew up there near one of the big radio telescopes, so I've always had a fascination with the night sky. In growing up, I moved to the north of Scotland, which has much less good weather, but still clear skies. I did my undergraduate at St Andrews. It's a fine university. I did my PhD at Keele, and then I came here to do a postdoctorate degree.
So what is it you're currently researching?
So I'm currently looking at dying stars. I'm exploring the process of stellar death, and how that process of stellar death enriches the universe with all the different chemical elements. So the process that I'm looking at is the chemical enrichment of the universe. So how we go from a hydrogen-helium Big Bang with no metals in it to this wonderful place in the universe today where we have lots of different things from carbon, nitrogen, oxygen are required to make life. So the process that I'm looking at is basically how we go from this neutral medium at the start of the universe where life is impossible to something that's much more structured with stars and galaxies, planets, and the life-bearing molecules that we see around us. And all those metals, all those heavy elements, come from stars. They're all produced in stars. And they're made in stars, but they don't stay in stars. They have to be ejected from them. They're ejected in stellar winds. These stellar winds condense lots of interesting molecules and dust that makes its way out into the galaxy, and it's reprocessed, and then it's formed into new stars, where we can see chemical enrichment happening.
So how is it you go about, is it observations that you're looking at?
Yeah, so it's mostly an observational background. So the process I look at is how material gets from the star out into interstellar space. So it's important this material actually escapes the star, otherwise it's locked up in the stellar core, and then we can never have nice things like planets going on. We don't really understand how this process works. We've got a star, and we know that it's losing mass. It's ejecting its material out into space. But there's a whole heap of complicated things from magnetic fields to stellar pulsations to radiation pressure on dust that actually eject this material into space. We don't really know how those factors interplay with each other to actually eject the material.
So is it optical observations?
I use a variety of wavelengths. I've recently published a paper that uses every wavelength from gamma rays down to radio waves and everything in between. It's mainly focused on the infrared, so we look at the infrared because it's got all the signatures of the warm dust. Like infrared goggles, we can see this warm dust emitting heat because it's at the same sort of room temperatures that we expect on Earth. And we can look at the bands of that dust and identify from those bands what it's made of, from the strength of the bands, from the relative shapes of the bands, and from the wavelength positions of the bands. But I also look a lot in the optical. If I want to look at the star, if I want to look what it's made of, I have to look in the optical to see the spectral lines of the star and measure the relative strengths of those lines and those molecular and atomic lines to work out the abundances of each different chemical element in the star. But I might also use radio waves to examine the process of stellar mass loss in the outer envelope. So look at things like molecular transitions in the radio and submillimeter. And for that, we need a wide variety of telescopes, space-based, ground-based, things like the ELMA array in the Atacama Desert, the Very Large Telescope, the Spitzer Space Telescope. We use a variety of large instruments.
What kind of stars are you looking at?
So the stars that I typically look at are old stars and stars which have compositions very close to the original hydrogen-helium mixture that we had in the Big Bang. We call these metal-poor stars, and we can't typically find them anywhere near the Sun because the stars that we find near the Sun have been enriched by this whole 14 billion years of chemical enrichment that we've had to date. So the stars that I typically look at need to be well away from the galaxy, where we've had very little star formation, and where all these old stars and these very primordial stars still exist. The typical places that I look are globular clusters and dwarf galaxies. These sort of systems are maybe 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times smaller than the Milky Way, so it's very difficult for star formation to actually happen in these environments. And in a lot of cases, star formation ceased very soon after the universe was formed. So these represent really the oldest stars that we can see. They're important because they represent the transition from the first stars that we saw, which were hydrogen and helium rich, to today's stars, which have got lots of different metals and lots of different interesting chemical elements in them.
So you mentioned that they're metal poor stars. What do you mean by that?
Well, astronomers classify metals as anything other than hydrogen and helium. Everything else gets lumped together in this category metals. So all these metals were formed in the middle of a star. This includes things that we don't normally classify as metals, things like carbon and nitrogen and oxygen. These stars have very little of these metals because they've undergone very little of this chemical enrichment. There's been very few stars before them produce this carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and all the other metals that go along with them.
What is a globular cluster?
Well, globular clusters are some of the most interesting things you can actually see in the night sky because you can actually resolve all the stars in them. They're basically conurbations of about 100,000, about a million stars maybe. They sit in these city-sized conurbations that orbit the galaxy in very peculiar orbits. They're very old objects. They haven't changed much in the last 10 billion years or so. And so they represent a really good primordial ground for actually observing the kinds of things that we want to. And if you actually go out into the night sky, you can see quite a few of these at any given time. From the Northern Hemisphere, M13 is a very good one. It looks a bit like a sneeze in the sky. They're very good objects to observe with any kind of binoculars, backyard telescope.
That's fascinating. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
You're welcome.